Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests that are designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. The show is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, full-service firm providing services to clients all around the Washington, D.C. metro area and across the United States. If you'd like to know more about OFP, check out our website at www.ofplaw.com. Or if you'd like to make an appointment, call us at 703-218-2100, and our receptionist will be happy to schedule an appointment with one of our many attorneys in the area in which you're interested. Today, we're going to be talking about funding and revocable trusts. Now, in the past, we've talked about this topic many times, but it bears re-emphasis, particularly in light of the changes that were made in the estate tax laws that were passed at the end of 2010. Many estate planners are crying out there saying that there's no more estate planning to be done. But I would argue with them and urge you that estate planning still needs to be done for a variety of reasons. And the reason we use revocable living trusts are basically what I refer to as the four P's. A revocable living trust is helpful to clients who want to avoid the court-driven process of P for probate. When someone dies and owns assets in his or her own name, the court generally governs the process over which assets will pass to heirs. It usually involves admitting a will into the process of probate. It then may involve submitting an inventory to the local jurisdiction, followed by accountings for every penny that goes into the estate and out of the estate, including the value of assets. It may require that appraisals are obtained and taxes have to be paid, particularly in Virginia. We have what is called a probate tax. So, to avoid the unnecessary cost of probate, we use what are called revocable living trusts. These vehicles, if properly funded and set up during your lifetime, can avoid the unnecessary cost and complexities of probate and help your heirs gain access to your assets without the problems associated with it. That's not to say that probate is bad for everyone or should be avoided at all costs. In some cases, probate is particularly useful. For example, let's say you really don't have anyone in your family that you trust to take care of your assets in the way in which you want them taken care of. Going through the probate process and having the court supervise what happens with your assets is probably a great benefit and of great comfort to many clients. The second reason that we use revocable living trusts is for the P involved in planning. Planning for disability, planning for incapacity. If you use a revocable living trust and you put your real estate and other assets into this trust, then you can be sure that the title companies, that the banks, the securities organizations, the brokerage houses will respect the validity of the trust if properly drafted and structured to allow you to pass your assets in the way you want them to pass and to use those assets for your own well-being if you do, in fact, become disabled during your life. If you become incapacitated, did you know that in most jurisdictions, if the assets are not held in trust, you may be forced to go to court to make sure that the assets are being used properly for your benefit? This is the case, particularly in Virginia, even in light of the enactment of the Uniform Power of Attorney Act that was passed earlier in 2010. Now, that's the second P, planning for incapacity. A very important tool in that weapon is the revocable living trust. Number three, I mentioned probate. Probate is a public process, a process by which anyone basically has access at the courthouse to review the file of the decedent and discover assets that were held in his or her name in the estate. This is usually discovered by examining inventories and accountings. So it's not a private process, it's a public process. By contrast, sharp contrast, a revocable living trust can be used to provide for the passage of assets outside of the public scrutiny of creditors and predators and neighbors and friends and others who really want to know what you had when you died. And the last P in the four P's of planning with revocable living trusts is portability. I've mentioned portability in light of the new estate tax exemptions that are available, but the revocable living trust is a portable type of document. And given that we have so many transient individuals in the Washington, D.C. metro area, it's become the choice du jour. It is the document that everyone uses because they know that if they have to move back to California or to Idaho or the District of Columbia, Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, Florida, New York, the revocable living trust is recognized and usable in all of these jurisdictions and for the very purposes that I recommended to you before. Now, a revocable living trust is your trust, so you're in charge of it during your lifetime. That means that you can put assets into it at any time, pull assets out at any time, modify the trust, amend it, change it, terminate it, start a new one, anything you want to do if you're the grantor of the trust. In addition, the trust uses your Social Security number. What that means is, for income tax purposes, it's ignored so that all the interest and dividends and rents and royalties that are being received by the trust, by you as the trustee, basically pass through and are reported in exactly the same way they're reported as if you individually owned those assets during your lifetime. That's a huge benefit. So transparency is a benefit of using the revocable living trust. But it only really works if you fund your trust. So if you use a revocable living trust, instead of relying on a will or joint ownership or some other form of property ownership in your estate planning, one of the most important aspects in order to fully utilize the benefits of the revocable living trust is to make sure that the assets you own are placed inside the trust. I refer to that as funding. It's transferring ownership of your assets during your lifetime from you to the trust. You can physically change the titles of your assets from your individual name or joint beneficiary names if you're married to the trustee of your trust, which is you. You also can change beneficiary designations on life insurance, retirement assets, and other types of assets to your trustee instead of an individual beneficiary. In the case of revocable living trusts, you're typically your own trustee, so the change in ownership is simple and really doesn't have any adverse effect on you whatsoever. You control the assets in your living trust. Now, if you've gone to the expense and effort of having an attorney draft revocable living trusts for you or doing it on your own, but you haven't changed the title of your assets or your beneficiary designations for your life insurance and your retirement assets, your assets still may end up going through the probate process, which is one of the very first reasons that I listed for using this type of vehicle. The process entails preparation of inventories, accountings, again, court-driven, costly, and complicated. So the goal is not to forget to transfer the assets in the trust, it's to move the assets now. At Odin Feldman and Pittleman, we can help you with funding your trust, in addition to helping you draft the trusts. It's not particularly difficult, but if you find that it's becoming cumbersome to you, use one of our paralegals to help you. One of the common questions I get about revocable living trusts is whether to move real estate into a living trust. Some of the horror stories you've heard from your neighbors, they say, well, you know, I was told to put my real estate into the living trust, and then when I went to refinance my home, the bank came and told me to take it out of the trust, or else they weren't going to give me the favorable terms that they were offering to all the other people. And the answer is, well, if that's the way the bank is, even though it's not particularly required under the law to do that, in order to receive favorable refinancing terms, low-cost refinancing, low-document production refinancings, then it's not hard to take the asset out of the trust. It's merely accomplished by preparing a deed. The deed transfers the assets back to you. You refinance the property. And then once the refinancing is done, you put it back into the trust. In fact, federal law requires the banks to allow you to do this for your personal residence. So putting real estate in a trust is a good idea. And here's one of the reasons why in Virginia and Maryland in particular. We have a statute that says if you owned the asset as husband and wife, for example, tenants by the entireties, and transferred the asset, a real estate, principal residence, 50-50, one share into your revocable trust and one share into your spouse's revocable trust, the asset protection that you enjoyed as husband and wife will carry over to the two trusts so that one of your creditors can't force a sale of the property if there is liability or a judgment obtained against one of you. The same rule applies now in Maryland. A recently enacted statute mirrors the Virginia statute, which allows you to take tenancy by the entirety properties, husband and wife property, split it 50-50, and put it into two separate revocable trusts. This accomplished some tax planning objectives under prior law and may be valuable in the future depending on what happens with the estate tax law. So, revocable living trusts, funding your trusts, if you want to know more about it, give us a call at 703-218-2100. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth. And right after this special message, our special guest will join us on another episode for your listening pleasure. Stay tuned.